somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world. The world of darkness. Nobody expected it. Nobody believed it. And nothing could stop it.
There are no experts. You probably know as much about possession as most priests. Look, your daughter doesn't say she's a demon. She says she's the devil himself.
I'm telling you that that thing upstairs isn't my daughter. Now, I want you to tell me that you know for a fact that there's nothing wrong with my daughter except in her mind. You tell me you know for a fact that an exorcism wouldn't do any good. You tell me that!
The one hope. The only hope. The exorcist.
Hello, welcome to Movie Heads. I'm your host, George, and that opening piece you heard was the trailer for the movie we're covering today, which is The Exorcist. This movie was made in 1973, and it runs at 2 hours and 2 minutes. It is rated R. The movie was directed by William Friedkin and written by William Peter Blatty, who used to write comedies, but then got to a point where he realized it wasn't paying the bills, and he changed it over to drama, horror, thriller, and pulled it off pretty good. Cinematography by Owen Roizman, produced also by William Peter Blatty, music by Jack Nitsch, and the starring cast members are Linda Blair, Ellen Burstyn, Max von Sydow, Lee J. Cobb, Kitty Wynn, Jack McGowan, Jason Miller, and William O'Malley.
Mine. Can you help me know what the boy got for her? I'm a Catholic.
Anyways, so the storyline goes, it's a visiting actress in Washington, D.C. She notices dramatic and dangerous changes in the behavior and physical makeup of her 12-year-old daughter. Now, meanwhile, a young priest at nearby Georgetown University begins to doubt his faith while dealing with his mother's terminal sickness. And, bookending the story, a frail elderly priest recognizes the necessity for a showdown with an old demonic enemy. Wow. So going into a little bit of movie facts with you. Now, the scene where Reagan projectile vomits at Father Karras's only required one take. The vomit was intended to hit Jason Miller in the chest area, but the plastic tubing misfired, hitting him in the face instead. Now, his reaction of shock and disgust while wiping away the vomit was genuine. And Miller admitted in an interview that he was very angered by this mistake. You remember that scene, right? So, apparently due to death threats against Linda Blair from religious zealots who believed the film was glorifying Satan, Warner Brothers actually had to hire bodyguards to protect her for about 6 months after the film's release. Man, that's how you know the film means something. And in an interview, Jason Miller, Father Karras, stated that he had a major verbal confrontation with William Friedkin after the director had fired a gun near his ear to get an authentic reaction from him. He had told Friedkin that he's an actor and that he didn't need a gun to act surprised or startled. Now, this is Warner Brothers' highest grossing film of all time when adjusted for inflation. And on the first day of filming of the exorcism sequence with Linda Blair, her delivery of her foul-mouthed dialogue was so disturbing that the gentlemanly Max von Sydow, that he actually forgot his lines from that. And when they filmed the bedroom set to be refrigerated to capture the authentic icy breath of the actors in the exorcising scenes, Linda Blair, who was only in the flimsy nightgown at those scenes, she said that to this day she can't stand being cold. Now, actress Mercedes McCambridge, who provided the voice of the demon, she insisted on swallowing raw eggs and chain smoking to alter her vocalizations. You know the voice.
What a wonderful day for an exorcism. Doom daddy bloom. In time. In time.
That voice, remember? I think I got a temporary exorcism myself. Anyways. Well, so it seems that upon its initial theatrical release, the film affected many audiences so strongly that at many theaters, there were paramedics that kept getting called to treat people who were fainting and others that went into all kinds of hysterics. Can you imagine? That must have been crazy. It must have looked like the inside of a madhouse at that point. What's funny, too, is that Jack Nicholson was actually up for the part of Father Karras before Jason Miller landed the part. Originally, William Friedkin, he thought that Nicholson was just too unholy to ever even play a priest to begin with. And he's probably right. Now, according to William Friedkin, the subliminal shots of the white-faced demon, those are actually rejected makeup tests for Rakin's possessed appearance, but they ended up using it anyways for other reasons. So you see, you never know when something's needed or not going to be needed. You never know.
Your mother sit here with this curse. Would you like to leave a message? I see that she gets it.
Now, one of the most famous scenes in the movie and the shot that used for the posters and the cover of the DVD and the VHS releases was all inspired by the 1953-54 series of paintings that were called Empire of Light. El Imperi de Lumieri. That's the way they say it in that language. And that's by René Magritte. Now, it's a scene where Father Marin, you know the scene when he steps out of the cab and he stands in front of the McNeil residence and he's bathed in an eerie glow that's coming from Reagan's window. It's an awesome, awesome scene. And as to how this all started, this is the truth now. Okay, now the author, William Peter Blatty, he once won $10,000 on the Groucho Marx show. Now, this is an old show, folks. Okay, it was in black and white. It was called You Bet Your Life, and it was back in 1950. Now, when Groucho asked what he had planned to do with the money, Blatty said he had planned to take some time off and work on a novel. And that novel was this result of The Exorcist Now. So you see, Groucho was mentioned in the film by Lieutenant Kinderman in jest as playing Othello. And that was done on purpose. They brought that up in the movies for that reason. So it was his homage to say, hey, here I am doing it now, just like I said I would. Would you believe that when originally released in the UK, there was a number of town councils that imposed on a complete ban on showing of the film anywhere within their leagues? So this led to a bizarre spectacle of what's called exorcist bus trips. Okay, can you believe this? A bunch of people got together and went on like a turnaround, just like they do for Vegas turnarounds, but they did a turnaround to go see the Exorcist movie where they were showing it in another theater in another town. Okay. Now, this was the enterprising travel companies. They were organizing these buses to take groups like this nearest to the town where this film was showing. It became a little business for a while there. That won't happen again, I don't think.
The shaking of the bed, that's doubtless due to muscular spasms.
Oh, no, that was no spasm. Look, I got on the bed. The whole bed was thumping and rising off the floor and shaking, the whole thing, with me on it.
Okay, and apparently, sorry to get a little graphic here, folks, but through the often cited as one of the most shocking scenes in cinema, which was the crucifix masturbation scene, that was actually greatly toned down from that of the novel. In the source book, the scene is much longer, gorier, and sexually explicit. Now, with Reagan suffering a broken nose, a butchery of her genitals, and orgasming at the same time? How? And proudly to say that The Exorcist is the very first horror film to ever be nominated for an Academy Award for Best Picture. This is the only other one as to Get Out, which is in 2017, and there was Jaws back in 75, then Silence of the Lambs in 91, and then The Sixth Sense in 99. These were all nominated, but the Silence of the Lambs did win, but these films are not designated as horror films on IMDb or any other search engine for movies. So this is kind of messed up. Okay, now Linda Blair receives her Best Supporting Actress Oscar nomination before it was widely known that previous Supporting Actress winner Mercedes McCambridge had actually provided the voice of the demon. Now, by the Academy rules, once Blair was given the nomination, it could not be withdrawn. But the controversy about Blair being given the credit for another actress's work ruined her chances of winning the award. Now that sucks for her too, so in case she would have won it. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. That must be typical Hollywood.
I am no one. I am no one. Fear the priest. Maren! Maren!
Give us time.
Fear the priest.
I feel it is warm in the body.
Maren!
Give us time.
Now, some might be aware, some might not, but now the contortionist Linda Hager, that was her name, she was hired to perform the famous spider walk scene, which was filmed on April 11th, 1973. Now, Ms. Hager, she was able to perform the scene by use of a harness and some flying wires that were hung above the staircase that they used on the set. Now, she would advise Friedkin when she was just barely touching the stairs with her hands and feet. And then she would maintain that light touch as she was moved down the staircase by the harness and the wire. So now Friedkin deleted the scene before the film's December release because he felt it was just too much of an effect because it appeared so early in the film. He also later admitted that another reason was for omitting the scene was that there was no way to hide the wires from the view at that time. Now, almost 30 years later now, Friedkin changed his mind and added the scene back for the extended 2000 version with the wires digitally removed. And that scene is horrifying. This is what it sounds like. Things started getting a little crazy on the set, so director William Friedkin eventually asked technical advisor Thomas Birmingham to exorcise the set. You know, he refused, saying an exorcism might increase anxiety. Now, Reverend Birmingham, he wound up visiting the set and gave a blessing and talked to reassure the cast and the crew that everything would be fine. Now, there's an awesome documentary included on the 25th anniversary edition of this movie, Exorcist, which I happen to have, by the way. What a coincidence. And I've seen the documentary, and it is amazing. Now, the actors do reveal that in many shots, it was not necessary to act because what captured on the film was genuine. It was genuine reactions because, for example, now Ellen Burstyn, she mentions that her scream and her facial reaction after being slapped by Reagan was due to being pulled way too hard by a harness. And then Linda Blair's screaming was a reaction to being bounced around very hard on her bed. And then William O'Malley, who played the priest at the end, he recalled that William Friedkin slapped him in the face prior to shooting, and this caused his hand to tremble while blessing Father Karras, which was an amazing scene, by the way. So it did work.
Thank you.
So in order to make Max von Sydow, Father Marin, appear much older than his then age of 44, wow, because in the movie, I think they made him look like a 77-year-old or something. Now, the makeup maestro, his name is Dick Smith. Now, he applied generous amounts of stipple to von Sydow's forehead, his eyes, and his neck, and his facial skin was then manually stretched as this liquid latex would be applied. Now, when the latex would dry, his taut skin was then released, causing the film of rubber to corrugate, kind of. And now this daily makeup procedure lasted more or less about 3 hours, and it was apparently the cause of much of anguish that von Sydow had at that time. So get this, the studio wanted Marlon Brando for the role of Father Marin. William Friedkin immediately vetoed this by stating that Brando in the film, that it would then become a Brando movie instead of the important film that he wanted to make. And he's probably right. Now, Ellen Burstyn, she agreed to doing the movie only if her character didn't have to say the scripted line, "I believe in a devil." The producers agreed to eliminate that utterance. So here's another perfect example of when the studios don't know shit and the director is just trying to get his vision across. Now, apparently William Friedkin had the same problem making The Exorcist. Now, he states that the studio execs, they would come up on a weekly basis to have a look at the shooting progress, the whole time just shaking their heads continuously, believing that the movie was total ridiculousness. Well, now they can eat those words, because look what happened. See? Trust the director. And just in a quick little explanation, you know, the scene where the words "help me" arise on Megan's torso, that effect was pretty much achieved by constructing a foam latex, which is a replica of the actress's belly. And it was writing the words out with a paintbrush and cleaning fluid, then filming the words as they formed up with fluid. Instead, what they did was they ran it backwards. So it gave the impression that the words came outwards instead of in. Pretty smart. It was a very, very frightening effect, though. That's for sure. That's messed up, man. Father Marin couldn't even tell Father Karras, "Father Karras, look out!" Or nothing, he just left her, hit him in the head like that. He's reading like nothing. Well, this is interesting. Okay, now don't get scared if you don't have a middle name, okay? Because I'm with you on this. I only have a first and a last name. So now, apparently before starting an exorcism, Father Marin would ask Chris Weather, her daughter, does she have a middle name? Now, in the Middle Ages, Catholics used to give their children several names as they believed it would be hindered for Satan and harder for him to find out the child's real name and controlling one's soul. So, me, amongst others, with just first and last names, well, nothing's happened yet. Now, some of you are going to hate me for saying this because maybe you eat this, and I hope you don't, but apparently the substance that the possessed Reagan, Linda Blair, hurled at Father Damien Karras when she puked out that thick green substance. Okay, now apparently it is thick pea soup, by the way. It's specifically, it's Anderson's brand pea soup. So if you're one of those that eats that particular brand of soup and it's pea soup, boy, I'm sorry. Sorry about that. So this damn demon, seen but not named throughout this movie, his name is Pazuzu, a demon known in Assyrian and Babylonian mythology as the demon that brings famine during the dry seasons and locusts during the rainy seasons. He was the king of the demons of the wind. Well, yeah. So here's a funny little story. Okay, now during a 1984 reunion of the cast of The Exorcist on Good Morning America, this was in 1975, Ellen Burstyn told a story of when she was in Tucson, Arizona, filming Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, and that was in 74. And The Exorcist was opening in that city while she was there, so she went to see it. Now, she stated that the scene where Reagan has her arteriogram, the scene where Reagan gets an arterial catheter inserted into her neck, that part where most people started to faint after that scene, she saw a woman wobbling up the aisles and she decided to follow her, you know, for safety reasons. And then the woman finally fainted. Now, Miss Burstein was at her aid, you know, loosening her collar and talking to her. And then the woman began to come to. And Miss Burstein then realized that if this woman opened her eyes and saw her, this might cause the woman to panic. So Miss Burstein's exact words were that she might think she was in the Twilight Zone or something. So Miss Burstein asked assistance from another person to continue helping her while she took off. So according to William Peter Blatty, the writer, Warner Brothers wanted to change the title of the film after they took a survey and found that none of the participants knew what an exorcist was. Remember, at that time, this movie was never made, so people didn't know what that word meant. Why would they? So the actress Vasiliki Milliaros, you know, there you, the Father Karras' mom.
Why you do this to me, Davey? Why?
Her? She never acted in a movie before. She was actually discovered by William Friedkin in a Greek restaurant. Now, her only acting experience was in maybe some Greek stage dramas from when she was back in high school. But Friedkin selected her because she bore an uncanny resemblance to his own mother. And William Peter Blatty felt she resembled his mother too. Heck, for that matter, she looks like my mom too. So basically, the refrigeration bedroom set was cooled with four air conditioners, and the temperatures would plunge below 30 degrees. That's freaking cold. Now, because of that, the perspiration would freeze on some of the cast and crew, and on one occasion, the air was saturated with moisture. It resulted in a thin layer of snow falling on the set before the crew arrived for filming. Have a snowball fight before, you know, before calling the action. Well, producers sought to have Jamie Lee Curtis audition for the role of Reagan McNeil, but her mother, Janet Leigh, refused. Yeah.
I'm telling you that that thing upstairs isn't my daughter. Now, I want you to tell me that you know for a fact that there's nothing wrong with my daughter except in her mind. You tell me you know for a fact that an exorcism wouldn't do any good. You tell me that!
So the original shooting schedule was supposed to be 85 days, but filming in America lasted for 224 days. That's a little bit of a difference. Now, this is very interesting, okay? Now, the arteriogram scene. Now, there is a bearded man who assists the doctor. It is Paul Bateson. Now, he was an x-ray technician at NYU Medical Center, where that scene was shot and managed to get that small part. Now, in 79, he was convicted of the murder of a film critic and was sentenced to 20 years in prison. However, he bragged about and was a suspect in the murders of six men who he had picked up in gay bars, had sex with them, and then murdered and dismembered their bodies and put them in plastic bags just for fun. And this was in 77 and 78. Now, these were known as the bag murders. Although investigators believed his story, he was never actually officially charged, and those murders have technically never been solved. So Bateson was released from prison in 2004. Now, the whole story revolving the bag murders were later fictionalized in the movie called Cruising, which came out in 1980 with Al Pacino, which was also directed, coincidentally, by William Friedkin of The Exorcist. Coincidence? I don't know.
We still think the temporal lobe.
Oh, what are you talking about, for Christ's sakes? Did you see her or not? She's acting like she's fucking out of her mind, psychotic, like a split personality or...
Now, there are tales about ominous events that surrounding the year-long shoot, which include the deaths of nine people associated with the production, and stories about a mysterious fire that destroyed the set on one weekend. Now, actors Jack McGowan and Vasiliki Milliagra, they both died before the film was even released. Now, Friedkin, he was supposed to attend a dinner the night he had received William Peter Blatty's screenplay. Now, out of curiosity, he started reading the first few pages and ended up missing his dinner engagement completely. So that's how into it he got. And get this, a film goer who saw the movie in 1974 during its original release had fainted and broke his jaw on the seat in front of him. So he then sued Warner Brothers and the filmmakers, claiming that the use of subliminal imagery in the film had caused him to pass out. The studio settled out of court for an undisclosed sum. I can't believe it. This guy actually got paid for something. Oh, what is this country coming to? So Linda Blair apparently hated vegetables so much at the time that the use of the pea soup actually did make her vomit for reals. Now, Mercedes Kent Cambridge and Linda Blair, they never met in real life. Now, Cambridge, she's the lady who did the voice of the devil. So they never actually met. Now, the demon mask used in the movie, which is the Oni Baba, it's, I guess 1964 was the inspiration for that. It did inspire William Friedkin to use a similar design for the makeup in the subliminal shots of a white-faced demon. So that's where that came from. So Ellen Burstyn wore a bracelet in the film with a horseshoe on it because she had the idea that she wanted her character, Chris McNeil, to be poorly armed to fight the devil. And on the last day of filming, she gave the bracelet to Linda Blair. And several years later, they crossed paths on an airline to flight to Los Angeles. And Linda was wearing the bracelet that she had given her. Now, William O'Malley, this was the, I believe, the cop in at the end of the film. He refers to this movie to students as the pornographic horror film that he once did. So, as advised by a studio executive, director William Friedkin, he had made several cuts to the movie prior to the release, now citing that the scenes were unnecessary. Now, this offended William Peter Blatty, the author of the novel and the screenplay whom he had befriended, who thought that these scenes formed the heart of the movie. Now, Blatty even refused to speak to Friedkin for some time. And they eventually made amends many years later. But now when the immense popularity of the movie warranted a re-release on top of that, Friedkin, he agreed to reevaluate some of the deleted scenes and then put several of them back in as a favor to Blatty, creating an extended version called The Version You've Never Seen. Now, by his own admission, Friedkin tends to see this extended version as his favorite. So you got to check that one out if you haven't seen it. So to entertain and distract Linda Blair during the long makeup process she had to sit through, the crew set up a television near her makeup chair so she can watch the Beverly Hillbillies, you know, show from 62. Now, despite the studio's fears that the Motion Picture Association of America, which is the MPAA, would give the film an X rating, it got an R with no cuts whatsoever. The MPAA's decision, according to Friedkin, was that it was a brilliant, intelligent film that deserved to be seen by a wider audience. Regardless, many American cities, such as Washington, D.C. and Boston, chose to disregard the decision and gave it an X anyways. That's stupid. I mean, if the MPAA is saying it's rated R, then it's rated R. Why would you change it after that? It is what it is by the officials. Come on. People just got to dip their hands all in the same cookie jar. Now, for the vomiting sequence, Ellen Dietz, which doubled uncredited, of course, for Linda Blair and later sued unsuccessfully for puking credit and never got it. Now, the makeup veteran, Dick Smith, he rigged Dietz's face with these facial contours with sheets of heat formed these plexiglass that were secured at the corners of her mouth and behind her head. Now, a camouflaged nozzle anchored in Dietz's oral cavity, it provided the apparatus, which was through the vomit that could be forcefully discharged. Now, this was fed by supply tubes that were discreetly embedded in the plexiglass on both sides of her face. Now, Such was the complexity of the setup that Dietz could barely swallow or close her mouth because of it. Now, in one scene where the Jesuit president of Georgetown University, Thomas Birmingham, he does mention that Father Marin, now you know Marin, his name was graciously voiced out when he entered the home of Reagan. You remember that sound? Now, Shirley MacLaine turned down the role of Chris McNeil in order to make a similar, though much less successful film, which was called The Possession of Joel Delaney. That was made in 72. Now, ironically, the characters of Chris McNeil and Reagan were based on her and her daughter, Sashi, who Blatty knew. Now, McLaine is well aware of this and has talked about it in interviews. So William Friedkin says that in the making of the documentary that he cast with Jason Miller as Father Karras, because he had seen him in a stage play at his performance, it reeked of failed Catholicism, is why he wanted him for that role. Well, is that a compliment? So for those of you who have an intrigue on how the music came about, which of course I'm talking about Tubular Bells. Now, after he had rejected Lalo Schifrin's score, William Friedkin was in the office of the Atlantic Records chief Ahmet Erdogan, and he noticed a copy of Mike Oldfield's just released Tubular Bells and was intrigued by the album cover. Now, he placed it on the turntable, and after hearing the opening part, that's when he decided there and then that he's going to use it as a theme for the movie. Isn't that something? It literally came to him. And as for Friedkin, on a DVD commentary, Friedkin had said that the making of this film made him believe in demonic possession. Wow, that completed a turnaround for his beliefs. That says something big about the film. Now, as for how Captain Howdy came about, now, Captain Howdy is a play on Howard, which is Reagan's father and Chris's estranged husband's name. We learned from the shot of the tabloid magazine at the beginning that Reagan is looking at, which says Howard walks out on Chris and daughter. Now, Mr. McNeil had just left them, and it logically follows that Reagan is devastated by that and is looking for a substitute, you know, a father figure. So the demon, after being contacted by Reagan, inadvertently, of course, through the Ouija board, knows this, and he introduces himself as Howdy to emulate her father and become the father figure that she is hungering for at this point in her life, which is what makes it so easy for this demon to come in. And that's pretty much how it goes. See, so if her belief had been stronger with her Catholicism, maybe she could have fought this demon off, but it was kind of on the fence at this point.
You really don't want me to play, huh?
No, I do. Captain Howdy said no.
Captain who?
Captain Howdy.
Who's Captain Howdy?
You know, I make the questions and he does the answers.
Oh, Captain Howdy, yeah, I see.
Nice.
Oh, I bet he is.
Here, I'll show you.
He's nice. So at one point, the search for a young actress capable of playing Reagan was so tiring that Friedkin claims that he even considered auditioning adult dwarf actors at that point. Man, they must have gone through a lot of actresses. Now, the movie itself was originally to be remade in 2015, but was canceled. And Stanley Kubrick, he wanted to direct the film, but only if he could produce it himself. Now, as the studio was worried that he would go over budget or over schedule, it eventually settled on Mark Rydell. But William Peter Blatty insisted on Friedkin instead. And after a standoff with the studio, which initially refused to budge over Rydell, Blatty eventually got his way and Friedkin got the job. So now you know how that all came about. So get this, Alfred Hitchcock, okay? Yep, Alfred Hitchcock, he turned down the chance to acquire the screen rights to the novel and also turned down the chance to direct the film when another producer bought the rights to the property. Can you imagine if Alfred Hitchcock would have directed this movie? I wonder how different it would have been, or would it have been what it was? Who knows? Something we'll never know. Now, several scenes were filmed that director Friedkin would have loved to include in the movie, such as a scene showing Chris and Reagan actually visiting some historic landmarks, as Chris suggests they should do in the movie. However, the soundtrack for the scene had gone missing, and another scene showed a possessed Reagan slithering over the floor and upsetting several house guests by making obscene gestures with her tongue. Now, the original negative of the scene got lost, and Friedkin refused to use the qualitatively inferior work print that he had of the scene instead. So I don't know if that'll ever surface again, or would we ever see that? Who knows? Now, there is a documentary called Raising Hell, Filming the Exorcist, which is included with the 2010 Extended Director's Cut. Now, Christian evangelist Billy Graham, now he claimed an actual demon was living in the celluloid reels of this movie. Come on, man. And of course, The Exorcist can't be all serious now. Come on.
God! Please, Lord, help me to release this demon!
Thank you, Lord. The most merciful Almighty.
Enchiladas.
Thank you, Lord.
So in the novel, the possessed Reagan has diarrhea and frequently relieves herself. Now, because of this, she has to wear diapers, and it is also frequently mentioned in the book that her bedroom has an almost unbearable stench. Like a real shithole, in other words. We'll talk about ingenious sound. Gonzalo Gavira, now, he was called on to create many of the special sound effects after William Friedkin recalled his work from a movie called El Topo in 1970. Now, one of the more memorable sounds was the 360-degree turning of Reagan's head. Now, that was actually made by taking his old cracked leather wallet and twisting it back and forth against the microphone. Isn't that something? So it's implied that Reagan was being molested by Burke, Chris's director and friend, you know, that weirdo that kept calling that other guy a Nazi bastard when he was drunk. That guy was weird anyways, and this is more obvious in the novel. I think everybody knew that anyways. Now, the Prospect Avenue apartment where the story takes place was actually once inhabited by the author William Peter Blatty while he was a student at Georgetown University. The house was owned by Miss Florence Mahoney and is right at the corner of 36th and Prospect. For those of you who happen to be in the area and happen to see it, my cousin of mine actually happened to see it and sent me a picture of it. I thought that was totally cool. Now, during the shooting of the exterior scenes, the crew had to build a special set to allow the sunlight in to keep her garden plants from dying. So they had to add some stuff to it. But still, that would be a cool place to go check out. So Linda Blair had it written in her contract that she would not wear any of the same demon makeup for Exorcist 2, The Heretic, which was made in 77, since the experience of doing it in the first film was so harrowing. Now, this is why the demon is so beautiful and feminine in part two, whereas opposed in part one, it was so monstrous. Now, I don't know what they mean by that. I would take that as an insult, not a compliment.
The power of Christ! The power of Christ compels you!
So Entertainment Weekly and Maxim voted this, The Exorcist, the scariest movie of all time. Now, Marin and Karis repeat the famous phrase, "The power of Christ compels you together." Does anybody know a total of how many times? You want to guess that? Think about it. They say it a lot in the movie. The power of Christ compels you. The power of Christ compels you. You keep saying it. I'm going to have lunch and come back. The power of Christ compels you. I got first shift. No problem. You come back later. The power of Christ compels you. So, you give up? Okay, I'm going to tell it to you right now. So, do you think it was 10 times? Do you think it was around 15 times? Or do you think it was around 20 times? All right, whatever you guessed, here's the answer. It was a total of 14 times. Ah, I don't know if you got it or not. I didn't. All right, so here's an interesting fact for you, okay? Now, pay attention to this. You will trip out, I guarantee it. Now, it seems fairly clear, okay, at least by the end of the story, that the demon's target was Karis all along. Now, think about it. The following exchange comes as close as anything to stating this explicitly. Now, the demon, when he speaks and when Karis speaks, okay? Now, the demon, remember the scene?
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
And then Father Karis would say, "You would like that?" And then remember the demon would respond intensely when Father Demon Karis, "But wouldn't that drive you out of Reagan?" The demon would respond,
"It would bring us together."
And Father Damon would respond, "You and Reagan?" And then remember the demons, this is the part where it brings it all together.
"You and us."
Huh? Coincidence?
You son of a bitch! Take me! Come into me! God damn you! Take me!
So on how the characters came about, so William Peter Blatty was friends with Shirley MacLaine and had visited her at her estate where she was raising her daughter Sashi Parker by herself. She was surrounded by an entourage of nannies and tutors helping with the process, taking time out here and there to film a movie. This became the inspiration and the prototype for Chris and Reagan for the movie. Now, while the novel was being written by William Peter Blatty, he was at the same time collecting unemployment benefits. So lucky him that this thing took off, huh? And apparently Max von Sydow was always William Friedkin's first choice to play Father Marin. When von Sydow was given the book by William Friedkin and William Peter Blatty to read with a note that they wanted him to play a priest, he had assumed that he was up for the role of Father Karis. He was very surprised to finally learn that they actually wanted him as the exorcist himself, stating that in a 2013 interview, "I still don't really know why." That's funny. Old school filmmaking, that's what I'm talking about. So according to DPO and Roisman, all of the spectacular visual effects in the film were created in camera. So I always say, if you can utilize a camera to make a special effect or make a film better, do it that way. So 6 minutes were recorded for the Warner Brothers edition of the trailer. And when that came out, the people who saw the trailer reacted against the film because the scenes were so heavy and frightening. So basically, most of them went to the toilet to vomit. But the trailer was terrific. But the mix of those frightening scenes and the music, which was also very difficult, and it was a heavy score, it basically scared the shit out of the audiences and scared them away. Another funny fact is, since 2020, the property in Georgetown used for the exterior scenes next to the infamous stairs is now a marijuana store. So get this, 1 week after the movie's release, when the movie studios realized what a great success the movie is, the studio then contacted director William Friedkin to propose a sequel. Now, he simply replied with, "Hell no." Another funny fact about this movie is, weirdly enough, this movie inspired the movie Jaws to be made. What happened was The Exorcist came out as a novel in 71, and then it was such a box office smash when they translated it to the screen in 73 that the same thing happened when they wrote the book for Jaws. They figured making a movie would make it double successful. And boy, were they right. So Chris McNeil in the book is about 32 years old. Now, the character in the movie is supposed to be 30-something, but Ellen Bernstein was actually 41 years old at the time. Now, Father Marin is supposed to be 72 years old in the book, but in the movie, he's 60 or 70-something. Although in real life, Max von Sydow was only 44 years old. So that's only 3 years older than the Chris McNeil character. Amazing what makeup can do. So for a long time, the critical community was saying that this was the scariest movie ever made. Then it was The Shining. Now they moved on to the 1982s with The Thing. Before The Exorcist, it was Psycho, then Jaws for a while, and it also became Night of the Living Dead for a while. Before that, it was The Fly. Then there was War of the Worlds. Before that, Frankenstein, then Nosferatu, and Dracula. Does it ever end? So another quick guessing game. How many of you can guess how many Exorcist steps there are? Anybody want to guess? I'm going to give you 5 seconds. Hey, come on, guess. You can guess. Yeah, I'm just going to tell you. So look, there's 75 steps. There you go. So the entire exorcism scene from start to end lasts about 9 minutes. Doesn't seem that long, huh? So, of course, the two people that loved the movie from the get-go was, of course, Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert. They gave The Exorcist 4 stars. Now, this is amazing. Considering that Gene Siskel was notoriously prudish about horror movies, he gave a thumbs down to Poltergeist, Aliens, and The Silence of the Lambs. Now, Siskel, he frequently complained about terrorizing of children in movies, and he complained about similar themes in Poltergeist. But he said The Exorcist had such stunning professionalism at every level, and the ending was so moving with the priest heroically sacrificing themselves for the child, he said for that reason he loved it. Well, folks, thank you for joining me for episode 5 on The Exorcist. I'm your host, George, and this is Movie Heads. Be well and be safe.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.